We come on then now to the order and the movement. Obviously, and it's obvious in view of what I've already said, obviously I hope that in the course of the next 20 years, the order and the movement will grow. I can't say that I know that it will, but barring untoward circumstances, barring something like a major conflict, even a nuclear war, I'm confident that the movement and the order will grow and increase. But I'd like to express a few hopes and preferences. I must admit, I must confess, I hope it's not a weakness. I would like to see more women order members. When I say more, I don't mean just absolutely more, but proportionately more women order members. I don't know why we haven't got more. I've puzzled about this for years. I've lain awake at night wondering why we don't have more women order members. Because we've got so many women in the movement. Is it because they're naturally slower? Is it because they're more thorough in their preparation, or more cautious, or more careful? Don't know. I must say I've not really been able to come to any definite conclusion. I don't any longer try to. But I can't help wishing and hoping that in the course of the next 20 years, the proportion of women in the order throughout the world will increase. I'd also like to indulge the hope that we have more anagarikas and more anagarikas. For various reasons. First of all, I think that if one can assimilate one's sexual feelings and live a genuinely celibate life, a naturally, happily celibate life, that is really best. And also, and I have expressed this view or this thought before, that if we do have men and women anagarikas and anagarikas, they will be able, as it were, I hope, to hold together a little more closely the two wings of the order. We do know, we have found from experience, that single-sex communities, single-sex retreats, single-sex right livelihood situations are excellent things, are conducive to growth and development. But we don't want these two, so to speak, not exactly separate, but distinct wings of the order, the Dharmachari and Dharmacharini wings, drifting too far apart. We must be very careful to keep them together at the same time, because we do, after all, constitute one order. And I'm quite sure that if we have a sufficient number of anagarikas and anagarikas, especially if I may say so, they're a little on the elderly side, mature, above, let us say, the emotional conflicts and turmoil that younger people are sometimes subject to. These anagarikas and anagarikas will form a sort of solid body, you know, right in the middle, holding the balance between these two wings. So I don't want, in a sense, I don't want to encourage people to become anagarikas. I don't want to urge them, because it is something you must not do prematurely. You mustn't take this vow, if you like to call it that, of celibacy prematurely. You must really be ready for it. And I doubt very much whether very young people are usually ready for it. I'd feel personally much more comfortable with rather older people who've been through, as it were, all that, through perhaps their family lives, and have then come out of the other end and dedicated themselves to celibacy. I hope to see, well, as I've mentioned, of course, in the past once or twice, an age of 40. I think I'd better revise that. Let's make it 45. That by the time you come to 45, and especially if you've been an order member, that gives some of you 5 more years grace, or disgrace, By the time you come, say, to the age of 45, yes, sighs of relief all round, you will be prepared seriously to consider celibacy. Yeah? That you'll start naturally, not because you think, well, Banti said once upon a time, you know, years ago in that particular lecture, that you start feeling naturally that way. Yeah? Your energies start quite naturally flowing, all of them, along purely cultural and spiritual channels. Yeah? You're naturally sublimating your, let us say, lower instincts or impulses. Yeah? And around that time, you start at least giving serious thought to the question of living a celibate life and becoming an oligarika. Hmm? That, of course, leads on to something quite closely connected, and that is the precepts. You all know that I gave, or rather I read this paper a few years ago on the 10 pillars of Buddhism. I don't know the extent to which people, I mean order members especially, study this paper, but clearly the 10 precepts are absolutely basic. The observance of the 10 precepts, as I've said before, represent a natural continuation, an application to every aspect of one's life, of one's original going for refuge. So I think I'd like to see, in the course of the next 20 years, people taking the precepts more seriously than they sometimes have done in the past. And, as it were, scrutinizing their own behavior, their own thoughts, their own words, in the light of those 10 precepts, those 10 ethical principles. And perhaps I could draw special attention to the speech precepts. I think I have spoken about this before, but it is a very important topic because we're talking so much of the time. We're speaking, we're communicating verbally so much of the time, and it's so easy to commit a mistake in this particular area. It's so easy to break or at least fracture, let us say, ever so slightly, one or another of the speech precepts. Now, I think in particular people need to pay attention to the question of a rough or harsh speech. I must say, I must admit, I'm sometimes surprised by the rather rough sort of way in which order members even do sometimes address one another. I think we ought to make a much more conscious effort to speak gently, kindly, thoughtfully, at the right time, you know, in the right manner, not in a rough or a brusque or an abrupt or rude manner. There's still, I'm afraid, even within the order, and especially perhaps I should say within the men's wing of the order, a very great deal of room for improvement in this particular respect.